Just to try to respond to Charlie's last speech, he began by saying, reiterating what he had said in his first speech in Acts 20, verse 7. He said, well, I guess he was saying they intended to eat the Lord's Supper the first day of the week, but he says it doesn't say they done it. He said, Paul, it does say they did have preaching, but it doesn't say they ate the Lord's Supper the first day of the week. So here's Charlie's argument. Yes, they intended to eat the Lord's Supper the first day of the week, but they didn't actually do it until the second day. Something like that. They didn't get it done. Charlie is confusing the wording of this verse with the wording of verses where an attempt was made to do something. Like in Acts 16, verse 7, it says, after they were come to Mysia, they essayed to go into Bithynia, but the Spirit suffered them not. They essayed. See, that says that they intended to. They didn't necessarily do it, but they intended to. That's what Charlie's thinking in Acts 20, verse 7, is they attempted or essayed to eat the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. In Acts 9, verse 26, when Saul was come to Jerusalem, he essayed to join himself to the disciples. It didn't say necessarily that he did, but that he attempted to. That's what Charlie's saying about Acts 20, verse 7, but that's different. It doesn't say they essayed, they just were going to try to, and they didn't get it done. Let's see how Charlie's reasoning would work on this verse. Matthew 5, verse 17, Jesus said, think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Charlie, did he fulfill it, or did he just intend to fulfill it? Now, according to Charlie's reasoning, it didn't say he did. He said he came to destroy it. I mean, not to destroy it, but to fulfill it. Did he fulfill it? According to Charlie's reasoning, he didn't. Just said that's what he came to do. Didn't say he did it. No, we recognize the wording there when he says he came to fulfill it, that means he did fulfill it. That was the reason he came to fulfill the law, and he did. Not that he just tried and didn't get it done. Let's try Charlie's reasoning out on Matthew 26, 29. But I say unto you, I will not, Jesus speaking, I will not drink henceforth of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. Well, it didn't say that he did drink it new with us in the Father's kingdom. It just says that's what he intended to do. So Charlie's conclusion is, well, he didn't do it. Now, we know that verse means that when we eat the Lord's Supper, the Lord eats it with us, spiritually, figuratively. That's what it means. It doesn't just mean, well, he was intending to do it, but he didn't get it done. Charlie's reasoning won't work. He doesn't believe that reasoning on any other passage except Acts 20, verse 7. I wonder why. The truth is, Acts 20, verse 7 is not just stating intent, it is also stating occurrence. Let me give you some examples of that. Acts 13, 44. And the next Sabbath day came almost the whole city together to hear the word of God. Is that just stating intent? Is that just stating intent? That they intended to come together to hear the word of God. No, it's stating that that's what they were coming together to do. That's what they did. Acts 15, verse 6. And the apostles and elders came together for to consider of this matter. Is all that saying is it that they intended to come together to consider this matter? Or is it saying that they did? We know what it means, don't we? We know what it means. And so why don't you know what it means? Why doesn't Charlie know what it means in Acts 20, verse 7? The disciples came together on the first day of the week to break bread. He says, oh, that's just showing that they intended to, but they never got it done. That's not saying that anymore when it says the apostles and elders came together to consider this matter, that was just their intentions. They didn't get it done. When it says they came together on the first day of the week to break bread, that's stating not only their intent, but what occurred. What occurred. And then Charlie said, well, Acts 20, verse 7 couldn't be talking about the Lord's Supper, because every time you read about the Lord's Supper, you're then reading about washing of feet. Now, I'm not accusing Charlie of being dishonest, not at all, but I don't believe Charlie believes his own argument. Let's look at a few passages where Charlie believes it's talking about the Lord's Supper, but it doesn't talk about the washing of feet after that. Now, Charlie, I didn't quote Acts 2:46. We'll get to that in a moment. The verse I quoted in Acts 2 was 42. So next speech, go to 42. In Acts 2:42, they continue steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, breaking of bread and prayers. I believe you'd agree with me that's talking about the Lord's Supper. It doesn't say anything about the washing of feet. Now, 1 Corinthians 11, verses 17 through 34. Charlie's already admitted that's talking about the Lord's Supper. Look at verse 24 and 25. Take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me. And then the cup. Drink it in remembrance of me, verse 25. Talking about the Lord's Supper. But it doesn't mention anything in this chapter about the washing of feet. The Lord's Supper is mentioned, you would agree with that, but it doesn't mention the washing of feet. So Charlie's rule that every time you have the Lord's Supper talked about, it always talks about the washing of feet is just not true. And we can turn it around and prove it the other way too. We can show a place where they're talking about washing of feet and it doesn't mention the Lord's Supper. Remember 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 10? The widow, well reported of good works, brought up the children. She have lodged strangers, washed the saints' feet. She have relieved the afflicted. She have diligently followed every good work. According to Charlie, this can't be talking about the washing of feet because the Lord's Supper and the washing of feet are always coupled together. When you read about one, you read about the other. No, it talks about the washing of feet. He's admitted that, and it doesn't mention the Lord's Supper. The Bible, God doesn't have any kind of rule that every time He's going to talk about the Lord's Supper, He's always going to talk about the washing of feet in the very next breath. That's Charlie's rule. That's not God's rule. We've shown it's wrong. It's a wrong rule. Even Charlie doesn't really even believe it. We've shown examples where he doesn't believe it. Now let's go back over 1 Timothy 5, verse 10. We're talking about washing of feet. And I like the way Charlie put it. Is that a church duty, meaning in the church assembly as a religious ceremony, or is it a home duty? As I said, something as an individual do to actually help somebody, not just a religious ceremony. Let's look at it again. She has brought up children. Church duty, home duty. Charlie said it's a home duty. Lodge strangers, church duty or home duty? Charlie said it's a home duty. Relieve the afflicted, church duty or home duty? Charlie said it's a home duty. But all of a sudden, when we read about the washing of feet, he says that's a church duty. Why? There's no rule of hermeneutic, no way you could logically say that this washing of feet is a church duty when all the others are home duty. There's only one reason Charlie would say that. Because he has to, or his position in this debate is proven wrong. He had to. I'm willing to rest this whole thing on this one verse because Charlie has to say the washing of feet here is a church duty or he knows his whole position is lost. You look at it. She's lodged the strangers. Church duty, home duty. She's brought up children. Church duty or home duty. She's relieved the afflicted. Church duty or home duty. Wash the saints' feet. Church duty or home duty. It's easy, isn't it, to tell? You see, it's a home duty. Washing the feet is something you do because somebody's feet are really dirty and they need it, and you're humble enough to wash their feet as an act of service, duty, work, to get the job done, not just when they're clean and it's a religious ceremony. Evidently, the Pharisees washed their hands as a religious ceremony, not necessarily because they were dirty, but because it was just a religious ceremony, and Jesus rebuked them for that. So they were adding to God's law, making up traditions in Matthew 15. Charlie's doing the same thing. He's making the washing of feet like the Pharisees were doing the washing of hands. Instead of something you do because your hands are dirty for cleanliness, you're doing it as a religious ceremony. Now we looked over at John chapter 13. Charlie's missing the point of that verse. Look at John 13. He misses the point in two ways. Jesus says, "He that is washed needeth not to save to wash his feet." Now what is that saying? Charlie's missing the point. That's saying that if you take a bath, if somebody's taking a bath, especially during those times, he's clean all over, but the only thing that's left that is dirty is his feet. He didn't get necessarily dirty if all he did was walk the dirt road. The only thing that is dirty is his feet. He's saying the only thing about this person is dirty is his feet and needs cleaning. Now here's the second place Charlie misses that. And it goes on to say, and you are clean, but not all. So he says, well, how could Judas be the only one that had dirty feet? Charlie, that's not what that's talking about at all. Jesus is switching to spiritual uncleanness here. He's not talking about physical cleanness or dirtiness in the last part of verse 10. Notice verse 11. For he knew who would betray him, therefore said he, you are not all clean. He's not talking about not all of his body was clean, not all and his feet were dirty. He's saying not all the disciples were clean. Judas, the one to betray him, was not clean spiritually. So Charlie missed that verse on 2 points. Now, if you can't see that he missed it in both of those points, then just turn to 1 Timothy 5, verse 10, and you'll be able to see it very, very easily. It's a home duty, not a church duty. Now, let's go back to Acts 2:46. Charlie, I didn't bring this verse up, but now that you mention it, let's look at it. Here's a case where Charlie is right that the breaking of bread refers to a common meal. But I want you to look at it because I want you to see how you know it's a common meal. It says they were breaking bread from house to house. Now, you know that's not the Lord's Supper. You see, the Lord's Supper, he says, you do that in the church assembly, and if you're doing a common meal, one to satisfy your hunger, do that at home. This is something that was done at home, therefore it was the common meal. And it says they did eat their meat with gladness and singleness of heart. This is talking about eating meat, meaning they're eating to satisfy hunger. Now, I wanted you to look at that, because now I want you to compare it with Acts 20, verse 11. In Acts 20, verse 11, we see that's talking about a common meal. Paul is sitting there after the services are over. He's talking a while. In our day and time, the preacher could be talking with somebody about football, like I was talking with the preacher the other night. He broke bread. That's a common meal he was eating. That word means for nourishment, to satisfy hunger. That's not the Lord's Supper. 1 Corinthians 11, we've already seen. If you're hungry, eat at home. The Lord's Supper is not to satisfy your hunger. And so, this is a common meal. It was done by Paul only, as far as we can tell, outside the assembly, after the church was already broken up. On the second day of the week, as Charlie said, if you're talking about Roman time. But in Acts 20, verse 7, this is done by all of the disciples when the church came together into one place. It's not done to satisfy hunger, and it's done on the first day of the week. Do you see the difference? Again, let me repeat. Acts 20, verse 7 cannot be talking about a common meal, that is, a meal just to satisfy hunger, like eating fried chicken and french fries and things like that. Because 1 Corinthians 11, in the discussion that Paul gives about the Lord's Supper, verses 17 through 34, and by the way, doesn't mention the washing of feet there, he says in verse 21 and 22, "For in eating, everyone taketh before other his own supper, and one is hungry, and another is drunken. What, have you not houses to eat and to drink in, or despise ye the church of God, and shame them that have not? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you in this? I praise you not." What he's saying, if you're eating to satisfy hunger, you should do that at home. Notice verse 34. "If any man hunger, let him eat at home." The Lord's Supper, the church assembly, is not a place to eat a common meal to satisfy hunger. But that's what we have in Acts 20, verse 7. 11, the church assembly had already broken up. But in verse 7, we're having the preaching service. The assembly, the church assembly, when they had come together. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 18, this is the way it puts it. "For first of all, when you come together in the church..." Or you could have translated that assembly. In chapter 14, verse 34, it says, "If therefore the whole church be come together in one place." That's what Acts 20, verse 7 is talking about. The disciples come together. It says they broke bread. It cannot be a common meal, a meal just to satisfy hunger, like we eat together sometimes. Because 1 Corinthians 11 says, if you want to eat that kind of meal, don't do it in the church assembly when you come together. Instead, do it at home. Wait till after the assembly is over. The church assembly is not for eating food and things like that. It's for worshiping God. Do you see that? Now, do you realize that Charlie has had 40 minutes of speaking? I'm going to estimate that he has spent somewhere between 25 and 30 minutes out of that 40. I could be wrong. 25 or 30 minutes talking about the washing of feet. Is that our topic for tonight? Now, there's an old debater's tactic. I'm not going to accuse Charlie of doing this tactic. But if we're supposed to be discussing the Lord's Supper tonight, and he has spent 25 minutes out of 40 talking about the washing of feet, the old debater's tactic is, if you can't answer what your opponent is saying, switch the subject. Switch the subject. Now, I mentioned to Charlie two or three weeks ago about the possibility of having another debate later on in the future. But Charlie declining because, for one, he has a rule about he doesn't really want to debate somebody twice. And he's also very, very busy. Okay? They're building two new church buildings. I think he told me the places, and I forgot. One up in Indiana, I believe, Kokomo. He's very busy. And I accept that. He's too busy to have another debate in the near future. But he suggested that there would probably be a number of you preachers, local preachers for the Church of God, the Union Assembly, that might like to debate me. And he said he would encourage that, you know. He didn't want to do it, but there might be a number of you men, preachers, that might want to debate me. We could do it perhaps more on a local scale, not like in y'all's annual assembly, but perhaps if we were to have a debate in Chattanooga, then I could get a Church of Christ to host half or all of the debate, and maybe you could host half, and it would be more on a local scale. I'm in favor of doing that. And the reason I bring that up now is this. The subject for tonight is not the washing of feet. It's the first day of the week, Lord's Supper. But he spent more than half his time on the washing of feet. I didn't come to debate that. I didn't sign a proposition to debate that. I am more than willing to debate one of you preacher brethren from the Church of God Union Assembly in the near future, perhaps next year, as I said, on a more local basis. I hope that you will come up to me and say, yes, you would like to have a debate. And that could be one of the topics for discussion. There are some other important topics that we need to discuss. But that's not what the topic is tonight. Please come up to me after the debate tonight or tomorrow or Saturday and say, yes, Pat, I would like to have a friendly public debate with you in my community. Could you get a Church of Christ there to host half? Please do that. And one of the topics we could discuss is the washing of feet. There are some other important topics. But why do we are we trying to debate that tonight when that's not the topic of discussion? The topic of discussion tonight is the first day of the week, Lord's Supper. Remember the debater's tactic? If you can't answer what the guy's saying, switch the subject. If you want to sign a proposition to debate the washing of feet, we'll do that. But that's not the topic for tonight. Again, I will say what I said last time. Two wrongs don't make a right. Charlie, suppose I am wrong about the washing of feet. Suppose I'm wrong. Does that make you right about the Lord's Supper necessarily? If I'm wrong about the washing of feet and we ought to be washing the brethren's feet in the services when the feet are clean as a religious ceremony, as he practices, if I'm wrong about that and I should be doing it, does that mean that Acts 20 verse 7 can be cut out of the Bible and that I'm wrong about Acts 20 verse 7, the Lord's Supper necessarily? No, it doesn't. Two wrongs don't make a right. But that's what Charlie is, in essence, trying to do. He's trying to deflect from the arguments I'm making for the Lord's Supper. And he's, in effect, saying, but Pat doesn't wash feet, therefore it's okay if we don't eat the Lord's Supper. That's really, in effect, what he's doing. The truth is, we do believe in washing of feet. We just don't believe that it should be done in the church service as a religious ceremony. Instead, we believe it should be done like you know it was done in 1 Timothy 5, verse 10, by the widow who lodged strangers, raised up children, cared for the afflicted. We believe it should be done when somebody's feet are dirty and need to be washed. It's a home work, as Charlie puts it, as those other duties were. And it's something that needs to be done. It's not something you just do as a religious ceremony. And that's all there is to it. No, it's done because it's needed to be done. We do practice the washing of feet when it's needed as a homework. But we don't believe it's authorized in the church assembly. John 13 is not a church assembly. The church was not even in existence at that time. And when it talks about the Lord's Supper in 1 Corinthians 11 in the church assembly, and it does, it doesn't mention the washing of feet. If it did, we would do it in the church assembly. But it doesn't. You see that? When Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper in John 13, that was on Thursday night. You see, that was the institute of the Lord's Supper. It wasn't the practice or the observance of the Lord's Supper by New Testament Christians. When they did that, they did it on the first day of the week, and they didn't wash feet in conjunction with it. Again, the debater's tactic is, if you can't answer the argument, switch the subject. I'll ask you, what has Charlie done tonight? Has he really tried to answer my arguments, or has he spent more time trying to switch the subject? Oh, we're willing to debate that in the future. Please ask us for the discussion, and we'll debate that and some other important subjects. I ask you to do that. But tonight, the subject is the Lord's Supper. And since we're talking about the Lord's Supper, let's look at the only verse in the Bible that tells us the frequency of the Lord's Supper. Now, 1 Corinthians 11, where it says, as often as you do it, you do show the Lord's death till he come. That doesn't say how often you're supposed to do it. It doesn't tell you do it often as you choose. It's just saying, as often as you do it, this is the purpose, to show the Lord's death till he come. Acts 20, verse 7 is the only verse that tells us how often. Upon the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul preached unto them. Do you see that? Now, we've been through the verses that teach you have to go by Paul's example. 1 Corinthians 4:16, wherefore I beseech you, brethren, be ye followers of me. Philippians 3:17, brethren, be ye followers together of me, and mark them which will so walk as ye have us as an example. Now, what was Paul and the disciples' approved example to us? New Testament example. What was it? Acts 20, verse 7, they came together on the first day of the week to break bread. Eat the Lord's Supper. You can tell that's the Lord's Supper. Compare it with 1 Corinthians 10, verse 16. It's in a church service. It's not something done at home. It was a church assembly work, not a homework, as eating a common meal would be. Friends and neighbors, the Bible is clear on this topic tonight. It is really clear. The Bible is the roadmap to heaven. And if the map says go north and you go south, you're not going to end up in heaven. You're going to end up in the opposite place. The Bible, the map to heaven, says to follow the approved examples of Paul and the other disciples. And the example is that ate the Lord's Supper every first day of the week. And you people who are, I've been told, are sincere, loving, good, moral people, you're not following this verse. You're not following God's will. You're not following the map. And if you're not following the map, you're not going to end up in the right place. And that's why I consider it important enough to travel up here and talk with you about this. And I appreciate the opportunity so much. Thank you so much for your attention.